This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is doing what has been described as an autopsy of the World Trade Center. Hassan Astane is a structural engineer who's being funded by the National Science Foundation to study the remains of the towers. He's examining the twisted and bent steel to analyze the building's strengths and vulnerabilities at the time of the attack and learn lessons we can apply to protecting future skyscrapers from terrorist attacks. Astane is part of a team investigation organized by the American Society of Civil Engineers. He's a professor of structural engineering at the University of California at Berkeley and has inspected many buildings in cities devastated by earthquakes. One of the most important clues he's discovered in his World Trade Center investigation is an internal column that looks like it was hit by the engine of the plane. I asked him what he can deduce from this evidence.
There were two theories. Some people thought plane was so strong, so fast, that broke the inside columns and just collapsed them. The other theory was no, columns were so strong that the plane hitting them broke apart and just disintegrated. It turns out that at least in this one case that I have discovered, that none of them are true. What happened here was engine is the most, the heaviest part of plane, and that is the one that causes damage. The engine has hit the column, has taken a chunk of it, kind of like half cylinder, out of the side of column and gone, but the column, or what is left of it, was enough to support the floors, and the column was still standing after even losing 40% of its capacity because part of it was taken away with the engine hitting it. So there is a third option here that happened, and that is plane hit the column, took a piece of it, with it, but the column was still strong enough to hold the floors.
What's another clue that you found so far?
One of the most important things I have found is that the design of this building certainly was just monumental. It's amazing what kind of innovations they have introduced to this building. And also construction of this building, these structures, was almost perfect. For example, all welds are where we kind of weld two pieces of steel and make connection and build a structure. So these welds, all of them were ultrasonically tested. Now, even now, we don't do it to our structures unless very critical structure like nuclear power plant or other structures. So this building in 1970s, early 70s and late 60s, all welds were ultrasonically tested. And that certainly shows up in my studies that none of the welds have broken, even after dropping from elevation of 1,000 feet. It's amazing. The almost perfect design, structural design, and almost perfect construction was perhaps the reason, in addition to the fact that this structure was designed for a 707 hit, was the reason why this structure stood the impact. It did not have much damage due to impact. What happened was, 1 hour later, of course, fuel jet burning that intensely collapsed it. But that 1 hour was enough to save maybe 25,000 people.
You say the building was designed for a hit by a 707 jet?
Yes, that's correct. In fact, Dr. Robertson was telling me, who's the designer of this building, structural engineer of this building, was telling me that when he was designing this building, he had to actually kind of put aside a lot of design codes of City of New York because they were not enough for such an important structure. So he had to go to the city and negotiate the fact that this tall building is located between two very busy airports. There is a possibility that there will be accidental off-track flight of planes into this building. He wasn't thinking of terrorist attack in those days, 1960s, but he was thinking that some plane during fog period might hit the building. So at that time, 707 was the largest that he thought should be designed, and he designed the building to withstand impact of 707. Of course, fire was another story. He did not design certainly for thousands of gallons of fuel being put inside the building.
Have you found any strange things in going through the steel from the collapsed towers? Strange things that don't necessarily relate to what you're looking for, but are very interesting nonetheless?
One of the things that I'm looking actually, I'm not just looking at the towers. There is another building in the complex called Building 7, which is a 47-story building, we call it kind of garden variety building because we have perhaps 100 of those buildings like that one, 47-story or in that category. These are part of a family of structures, and they are designed following certain rules. So, in fact, that Building 7 is very important to me and profession to learn from because the lessons of that 47-story can be directly applied to a large family of our structures. That building had gone through very, very intense fire in a way that some of the pieces that I have seen, in fact, the steel, this is almost, for me, it was unimaginable. Some of the steel that was like 5/8 of an inch thick that is evaporated. It's like you see ice on the lakes during spring when the weather is getting warm and then the ice gets thinner and gradually it's kind of disintegrated and becomes liquid. It's like that. It's like a paper thin and most of it is gone and the rest of it is reduced to almost paper thin thickness. That is amazing to me. I haven't seen anything like that. I'm not in fire engineering, but I haven't heard anything like this, that fire actually can evaporate steel that much. We still don't know what happened to that structure because that structure was not hit by the plane. Some people said some of the debris fell on it, but I feel that there was very intense fire that does not justify to be the result of paper burning. Because these offices have a lot of copies and papers and files. But the intense fire collapsed that building, and it's not clear what was the fuel for that kind of fire.
Are you suggesting that something happened in Building 7 that we don't yet know about?
Yes. I don't know what happened, but perhaps piece of wing, it's pure speculation on my part because I haven't been able to put things together yet. These are just pieces of puzzle that I'm putting together now. But my speculation is that perhaps a piece of wing, which really contains the jet fuel, fell on this thing. Maybe one of the wings of one of the planes fell on this, or half a wing, just fell on this building from height of 1,000 feet to about 500 feet. So there was a 500 feet drop of that wing. And upon impact, it may have ignited a fire or just dumping the fuel from the roof all the way down, and this was burning because of that fuel. But that is pure speculation. I don't know. But somehow we have to figure out what caused the collapse of this building first and what was the source of that fire that caused this collapse.
What temperature does steel have to get to before it melts?
Well, the melting temperature is pretty high, but you don't need to get to that temperature of 2,500 or more. What happens to steel is when you get to about 1,000 degrees, temperature, Fahrenheit, steel loses its capacity to carry the load. It's a critical temperature. It's like, imagine you have ice and water. They are the same material. It's the temperature that makes water ice, right? So when you start warming up ice, you don't need to melt the ice to lose strength. At certain temperature, ice actually is very soft before it melts. So steel is the same crystalline material. When you heat up the steel to 1,000 degrees, at that point, steel loses its capacity to carry load. If you continue heating it up, eventually you make it liquid. But that's not a concern for the structural engineering community. Our concern is that critical temperature of about 900, 1,000 degrees.
So you think that only a fire with, say, jet fuel in it could burn that hot?
Yeah, certainly. What we have is usually in these structures, we have fireproofing. And many, many years of research and development, we have information that we know how we can protect steel structures from reaching that 1,000 degrees. Because if they reach temperatures of 1,000 degrees, then everything is over. You shouldn't expect structure standing. It will collapse under gravity load. What we have done is we have come up with these kind of what's called ratings. All buildings have a rating. Most buildings have a 2 hours rating. What it means in terms of, you know, what it actually is, all buildings have a possibility of catching fire, right? And these fires usually are due to papers in the building or furniture or carpet. Those are called kind of office fires. What we do is we put enough fireproofing on the columns of steel material that if there is a fire and it lasts 2 hours even, the steel in that floor is not going to reach 1,000 degrees. So by that two-hour period, during that two-hour period, you can either evacuate people and everyone gets out of the building, and or you can bring firefighters and water and or sprinkler system works, and eventually during 2 hours you can save people and extinguish the fire, or actually everything will burn out anyway. I mean, there's not much in offices and furnitures in homes that can burn for 2 hours. But this was different. You had here tens of thousands of jet fuel, which is the worst burning, I mean, the most intense burning fuel. That's the way they have refined it to make sure that per weight, it has much more energy because you are using it in the plane. You want to have the intense fire for the same weight of fuel. So it's much, much more intense fire for jet fuel than your car gas. So you bring that kind of fuel and put it inside the building, of course, no fireproofing can last that intense heat.
As catastrophic as the collapse of the World Trade Center towers was, it could have been a lot worse. The buildings could have fallen sideways and crushed many of the buildings in their paths. Instead, they almost fell as if it was a controlled demolition. They fell pretty straight down. What was it about the structure that controlled the fall like that?
Yeah, I also agree with you. I think no one knows what these criminals had in mind when they decided to do this act of murder. But what I saw from the way planes hit, if you notice, in fact, one plane hit from one side in a way that if the tower that it hit had tilted over, which I think that is what they were expecting, because they hit it from outside in a way that the north tower will hit the south tower, and the other plane came actually opposite, hitting the south tower to collapse it on the north tower, hopefully having both of them going down on Wall Street, which would have caused immediate collapse, first of all, like Oklahoma City building. There was no time for people to escape. But also the whole length of building, 1,300 feet, toppling sideways, dropping on the blocks of Wall Street area. You can imagine the extent of fire and damage and casualties, perhaps in hundreds of thousands. But the building stood. So when they hit the building, it wasn't the impact that toppled them. They stood. Unfortunately, the fire toppled them. Basically collapsed. And then the nature of the structure was that one of the innovations was this structure used tube system. In other words, the whole structure is like a pipe coming off out of the ground. Now, if you have something like that, if you have a pipe, which is your structure, if you shoot that pipe with a bullet and create a bullet hole in that pipe is not going to collapse. It just has the bullet hole on the side. You cannot collapse tubes by just one hole. In fact, this column has this structure has about perhaps 60 columns on each side, which makes it a tube. These very closely spaced columns. So even plane and wings hitting about perhaps 10 to 15 columns and breaking them, it was nothing because you still had more than 200 columns standing. Even though we lost maybe 10% of columns or so, but 90% of columns were intact and they carried the load. Until you actually heated up all of them and all of them lost strength at one floor and the top floor collapsed on the bottom part and you had the catastrophic kind of cascading collapse. So the most important thing about the structure was that this is perhaps the only structure that had columns which are the vertical elements outside the building, spaced every 3 feet. No other building has this kind of spacing, closed spacing of columns. Usually columns are spaced every 10 feet. But this structure, because of its importance, the designer, Dr. Robertson, had decided that we are going to have a very stiff structure. Because it's not just the strength, you have to make your structure stiff also. So if you hit it, it doesn't bend too much. Otherwise, it topples. In fact, the structure is basically columns, and space between the columns are windows, those 22-inch wide windows. That's why this structure looks so strange when you looked at it. So the innovation here was really to use a very, very stiff, strong tube to make sure that the structure can withstand really lateral forces, hurricane, planes, earthquakes. So it was designed into the system not to topple, not to be toppled by lateral load.
Hassan Astane is a professor of structural engineering at the University of California at Berkeley. He's analyzing the remains of the World Trade Center towers. This is Fresh Air. My guest is structural engineer Hassan Astane. He's analyzing the remains of the World Trade Center towers. What are some of your recommendations for the building of new skyscrapers based on the lessons that you've learned from the World Trade Center?
I feel that what we should do is we should prevent planes from getting that easily inside the building and delivering the fuel. Now, one of the ways is what we are doing here at UC Berkeley, and I've been working on this project for a couple of years. Now it becomes quite applicable to this case. That is, we are testing and developing certain walls that are made of steel plates, such as they used in this World Trade Center. But in addition to that, we are adding a concrete wall behind that steel wall. So it is two walls together. It's kind of steel and concrete, and they are bolted to each other. So this kind of system used on the facade of high-rise buildings can prevent planes from getting inside the building that easily as they did in the case of World Trade Center, and that intact. There will be a struggle between the plane and such a wall, and the struggle may result, if we design it right, in a way that the plane will disintegrate outside the building. So with that premise, then we can avoid complete delivery of jet fuel inside the building and provide protection for building.
Is there a downside to the concrete reinforcement? I mean, it would make the building much heavier, not to mention more expensive.
Well, certainly every time you come up with a solution, you have to look at the effect of on other things. But this concrete can be lightweight concrete, and it's all constant thickness. So it's not just coming down as you have the high-rise building and becoming thicker and thicker. It's only 6 inches of lightweight concrete, but the gain that you make out of it is enormous. But as far as construction, it's very simple. That's why we bolt it. You can cast these concrete walls somewhere else and just transport it overnight to the site and pick them up and bolt them to the wall. It's very, very construction-friendly. It may add to 1% to the cost, perhaps even less. Less than 1% to the cost. And construction-wise, it doesn't add much more to the time of construction, but the gain you make is very large.
What was the situation of Ground Zero when you arrived on the scene to do your detective work?
The first time I went there, in fact, I didn't step on the lot, actually, that has the bodies. I just stayed at the gate where, beyond that, really, you enter the place where rescue workers are working. And it was just different thing than anything I had experienced. I just stood there. I just said my prayers and respect. And I didn't do any investigation, of course. It was just a totally different world. It was just huge number of people moving and cranes and trucks, but no one was speaking. It was just like robots from a silent movie era. It was just a totally different, horrifying experience. And of course, you know, when you are there, it's totally different than what you see on television from long distance. The smell, the view around it, that is all best of structures of New York surrounding this place, and in the middle of it, suddenly you are seeing like atomic bomb is dropped at this place. The sense of loss, even now that I'm talking about it, my body just kind of gets different feeling. It's just totally unexplainable. My English is not strong enough and good enough to explain what I felt.
Have there been any human remains in the metal that you're looking at?
No, not at all, absolutely. The time that I've gotten closest to human belongings, not human remains, of course, was when I saw one of the kind of lenses of someone's eyeglass, very similar to my eyeglass, embedded in the concrete of one of these beams that I was looking at. And that was the time that I was looking at the beams when they were coming out of the site, not at recycling plant. At recycling plant, they are washed and clean. But when I was looking at it, as soon as I saw this lens of a glass, in fact, I was with National Guard and police were there. This is the restricted area that I was working. So we were kind of like a group of truck drivers and National Guard people and police and recycling and recovery people. And all of us just kind of froze when I showed them that there is this lens. And that was the closest I got to human belongings. But that was enough even to make you emotional, because in the middle of all this, you suddenly realize someone was behind this lens doing the things that we do every day, like this one and other things. So that was pretty emotional. It was strong enough for me. I didn't need to see human remains. That was just good enough or bad enough for me to feel the depth of sorrow.
Well, I wish you good luck with the investigation, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Hassan Astane is a professor of structural engineering at the University of California at Berkeley. He's analyzing the remains of the World Trade Center towers. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.